Welcome back to In Bed with Lisa. Today, I'm very excited to introduce you to one of my favorite people in the world of sexology. He is very dearly loved in this network of people. His name is Silver Neves, and he is a qualified, experienced, and accredited psychotherapist who specializes in psychosexual and relationship therapy behaviors. That's what he's going to be talking to us about today. He is also a trauma psychotherapist with a focus on helping survivors of sexual abuse, and an author of two books, Compulsive Sexual Behaviors, A Guide for Clinicians, and Sexology, The Basics. Plus, he's co-authored some books. He is an absolute powerhouse. Welcome, Silver. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Lisa. Thank you. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. You are somebody who says your narrative and your use of the evidence in the world is different to what we hear in a lot of conversations about this particular topic. So we are talking about compulsive sexual behaviors. Otherwise, what people tend to think is addiction, sex addiction, addiction to pornography. This is fascinating, and I love that you speak so openly and share the truth about this. So could you maybe just introduce us to what is the difference between addiction and compulsive sexual behaviors?
Yes, it's the word addiction really has two meanings. There's the meaning of the popular language and there's the clinical meaning. And those are two very different ones. So in the public, of course, a lot of people use the word addiction for things that are not clinically addicted, but they are saying things like, I'm a cheese addict, I'm a shopping addict, I'm a chocolate addict, I'm a coffee addict. And what they mean basically is that I really, really love those things and sometimes I might overdo it. And so then they call themselves, you know, coffee addict. Okay, fine. That's no problem. I have no issues with people saying that. Okay. When it comes to compulsive sexual behavior and people call themselves sex addict or porn addict, it's a bit more problematic because the problem is that when people do say those things, they're actually shaming themselves and they're shaming their sexual desire and they're shaming their sexual behaviors. It's almost like saying, you know, I'm a coffee addict. Well, I love coffee and I might be overdoing it sometimes. I can get jittery when I drink too much coffee. But if they say I'm a sex addict or I'm a porn addict, what they're saying is my sexual desire is too much. I indulge too much in sex. Something is wrong with me and I'm very bad. I'm a bad person. It's kind of like the message behind it. And so it's not really helpful for people to say I'm a sex addict or I'm a porn addict because there's so much shame that's attached to this. And clinically, addiction, to call something an addiction clinically, it has to meet some very particular criteria which have never been found in sexual behaviors or in pornography. So even though it's, of course, we can be addicted to drugs, to some drugs and to alcohol, because those are addictive substances in some ways, it does some particular things in the brain, we've never found proper evidence that sexual behaviors or watching pornography does the same kind of brain changes that we see in other addictions. Even though some people say that they do see some stuff, some different things in the brain, often they actually mistake it for something else. So for example, when people show brain scans and they say, you see this part of the brain flashes up, that's because of porn addiction. Well, actually that's the same part of the brain that flashes up when you hug your child or when you do something pleasant or, you know, when you do something that is comforting. So actually it's not a sign of addiction. What it does is like a sign that you're doing something that you find pleasurable and soothing.
Absolutely. So I can really resonate with that, the idea of the shame that comes with those terms, sex addiction and porn addiction, because it's often used as like an excuse for behavior that you feel ashamed of or embarrassed about. Like, I couldn't help it. I'm like a sex addict. Like, we see it in celebrities. There's something big in the news right now where people are saying, I'm a sex addict, that's why this happened, or, you know, that kind of thing. So it really does make sense. So you're saying that there's no good evidence that people can be addicted to sex or pornography.
No, that's right. Not in the clinical
No good.
sense of addiction, that's for sure. So, and there's not been any the sex addiction and porn addiction has not been in any mental health manual, as in it's a thing because of the lack of evidence. And it's been researched over and over and over again, and we've just never found the proper evidence to properly call it clinically an addiction. And for years, actually for years, there's not been any kind of agreed definition of this thing that we call sexual compulsivity or whatever we want to call it. But so only since 2018, the ICD-11, that's part of the World Health Organization, have decided to call it compulsive sexual behavior disorder. But they've made it clear that it is not in the addiction category, it's in the impulse control category. And the impulse control category means that, well, it's not addiction, so you can't get addicted to it, but it's very much about the relationship between sexual urges and behaviors. So in the impulse control category is when you have strong sexual urges, what are you going to do? For people who are compulsive, who struggle with sexual compulsivity, they will not be able to know what to do with the sexual urges, and they might just act on it with behaviors quite quickly without any kind of like extra thoughts or extra methods of regulating themselves.
So it's more like a reaction, like an impulse, like you're saying. So is it possible then for people's use of pornography, for example, to be classified as compulsive? And is that something to be worried about?
I think with pornography, a lot of the time, if people are really, really honest with themselves, it's not so much that it's compulsive, it's just that it's very, very enticing, which is quite a bit different. The thing about pornography that is really quite unique is that it is a time that usually people spend on their by themselves, so it can be actually a really good quality time, and it's a quality time of solo sex. So, because usually people who watch porn actually masturbate with it. Very few people watch porn without masturbation. And so, and what it does is that it produces a sexual pleasure all the way up to an orgasm, which is very pleasurable. And the stats are showing that people tend to spend just under 10 minutes watching pornography in one sitting. So it very much means that it is, for all those millions of people watching pornography, that it is an aid to masturbation and to ejaculation. So it is very enticing. Of course, for a lot of people, they might perceive themselves as having a porn addiction or a problem with porn, because they might realize that they do a lot more, they watch a lot more porn than having sex with their partner. And then they start to compare the two and to think, well, if I watch porn 5 days a week and I have sex with my partner once a month, it must mean I've got a problem with porn, or it must mean I have a porn addiction. But all it means is that it's a lot easier to have a quick orgasm with porn than it is to have sex with your partner, especially if you lead busy lives or if you're tired at the end of a day or whatever. Finishing with an easy orgasm with a bit of a visual aid doesn't require so much energy, and it's a lot easier.
Absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of the guilt probably comes in then, because especially if you're connecting it to masturbation, which has there's a complicated relationship that we have with masturbation, even though we like in society in general, it's kind of accepted that men masturbate, for example, not so much for women. But then when you're in a relationship or when you're in a marriage or any kind of, coupling or throupling, it's sometimes then another element comes in of if there is porn and if you're masturbating, then is that taking something away from the overall relationship? Are you taking away from your sexual relationship with your partner by having this side kind of hustle, like a side chick, which is actually porn? Because I certainly feel that that's what I receive in my DMs, for example, a lot of women in particular who discover that their partners are using porn and they feel incredibly betrayed. What would you say to those women in particular? I'm stereotyping, it's a bit of a generalization, but it tends to be what I'm hearing. What would you say to
Yeah,
them?
it's such a very popular storyline, isn't it? And it's something that people really hold in their minds, and they're just really confused about that. And it is true. I mean, if you think about it, if you'll find out that your partner has been watching a lot of porn, and especially if they've been watching things that you've never done in the bedroom with them, or they're watching a certain type of body that you don't have, then it could be very easy to feel very insecure about yourself and to think, what does it mean? what does it mean that my partner is watching blonde women on porn and I'm a brunette, for example? Does it mean he doesn't like me or whatever? If he's watching threesome and we are, you know, in a monogamous diet, what does that mean? Does that mean he's not really satisfied with what we do? So all of those things are kind of a lot of insecurities that are often coming from the fact that people are really trying to find meaning into what is going on and compare what people do in real life compared to what they watch. And that's when a lot of confusion can come from, because a lot of the time people watch porn not because what they watch is what they want to do in real life, not because it's what they enjoy more. It's just different. It's just something else. So it's kind of like if you try to translate it in the rest of life, we don't, even though we might love a cup of coffee, let's go back to coffee. If we love a cup of coffee, and we drink coffee most of the time because it's our favorite drink, it doesn't mean that once in a while we don't want a cup of tea, or it doesn't mean that once in a while on a rainy day we want a hot chocolate. And so, you know, if we think the hot chocolate is this kind of like the extra bit that we like, you know, that can be the porn, but actually the coffee is your partner. And and it's really fascinating when we look at so much of the research in this area, because what really shows up is that people who watch porn tend to have more desire for having sex with their partners, actually, compared to the narrative that if you watch porn, it takes away the energy from your partner. Actually, what we find in research is that it's the opposite, which is quite fascinating. And also when you masturbate and you ejaculate, it promotes testosterone, so you tend to have more sexual desire. And people who have more sexual desire then tend to want to have sex with people that are closer to them compared to, you know, keeping watching porn. But of course, sometimes the problem in the relationship is not so much the porn, but it's just people having different values about it. So if somebody is watching porn and then they say, oh, my partner's going to disagree with that, well, they're less likely to then go to their partners after watching porn and say, hey, I'm quite horny now, let's have sex. They might just want to, you know, hide a bit, or, you know, because of the guilt or the shame or whatever. Yeah. And that's also what really shows up in research, which is very fascinating, which is that if the two people in the relationship have similar values about porn, then the relationship can be enhanced. But if people have different values about porn in the relationship, things can be in conflict. And so, and so if you look at this, actually, it's not really about porn itself. It's about a value thing. And it's the same thing that you see in other couples. For example, if one person is a vegan and they are in a relationship with a meat eater, and the reason why one is a vegan is because of the values of animal lives and animal rights, and the other partner is really loving the meat, well, that's going to be a relationship with a lot of conflict. Now, what are we going to say? Is it a meat problem? Is it a vegan problem? No, it's a value problem, and it's the same thing with porn.
That is so fascinating when you put it that way, because if they have differing values, then it's more likely that the person using porn is going to keep it a secret. And then often it's that hiding, isn't it? It's that doing it in secret that actually caused that feeling of betrayal or that break of trust. Yes. Whereas actually, if it can be brought out as a tool that can be shared or understood as a way to relieve it and stress, then perhaps it could be, you know, taken off the pedestal and just use for what it is, which is a visual aid, as you said.
That's so, right, yes. And I think sometimes people can feel betrayed because the conversation about porn is either not discussed or not really, or hidden as well to start with. So, you know, when people first meet, they might actually assume that their partner has the same values about porn, but they don't actually have the conversation, so they don't really know. They just make an assumption. So if you're assuming, for example, if you don't like porn, it's okay not to like porn, okay? It's a value like any other value. If you don't like porn and you're assuming that your partner has the same value without having the discussion, and then later you found out that your partner was quite keen on porn, it can feel that you've been betrayed and it can feel that you've been lied to. And most people, because they watch porn, you know, by themselves, they're not going to be going out there and say, hey, hi, I'm just going to go and watch porn after dinner, right? They're just going to do it without saying anything. So it's going to feel like a lie when it's found out. And so it's really important for people who feel betrayed that to validate that sense of betrayal and to validate the sense that actually, you know, it does create some very difficult emotions, but at the same time, rather than just blaming your partner for watching porn, more about what did happen between us that this was that this became a surprise. What happened between us that this was never discussed? And then, rather than blaming and getting further and further away from each other, it could actually be an opportunity. Having those difficult feelings about porn could be an opportunity to have the difficult conversations about values.
That is so true, Silva. That really makes sense. Like, where did we fall short here? How did we, like, where else have we missed out communication and just made assumptions about our values? It could actually be an opportunity to have those conversations. So from what you're saying, it sounds like compulsive use of porn isn't as prevalent as people might think. Because I was coming into this conversation with you today thinking, what can we do about the compulsive use of porn? But actually, what you're saying is it can be as simple as the fact of reframing the truth about how much sex we're having in our relationship compared with masturbation. And is that a problem, as well as the values? So is it possible for people to use porn compulsively? And what might be some like warning signs around that? Or is it something that we don't really need to worry about?
Yes, I think it is possible for people to use porn compulsively. But as you say, the number of people who have a genuine problem watching pornography is so much lower than what the media is trying to tell us, or what the narrative on porn addiction is trying to tell us. You know, most people don't really have an actual compulsive issue with porn. It's just a lot of shame and guilt that is the issue. Yeah. But for some people, a small minority of people, they will have genuine compulsivity with porn. And that's actually something to do with their own kind of psychology rather than porn itself. And so it's almost using porn as a way to regulate their emotions because they don't have any other methods to self-regulate. So if then porn becomes the only thing that people can do, you know, when you feel sad, when you feel tired, when you feel angry, when you feel disappointed at work, when, you know, all these emotions that we have every day, if then there's no other methods apart from watching porn and masturbating to it, it could then become a problem because it can get in the way of life. And the way that the signs to pick up is not so much about how many times you watch porn, that's not it. It's about, is watching porn start to become, to trump any other things that you need to do in life? So does that mean that, you know, if you watch porn all night long and then you can't wake up to go to work the next day, that is getting in the way of your life? If you are deciding to completely check out from dinner time with your partner or from going to birthday parties for your best friend because you'd rather want to have an opportunity to be alone to watch porn, neglecting friendships, that can be a problem. If you decide to watch porn to the level that it injures your penis because you're masturbating too much, then that can be a problem. So it's really looking at those signs. It's not the amount of time you do it. It's what problem does it actually cause in your life? Does it really get in the way of your life? And we're not talking just about upsetting your partner, because as we've just talked about earlier, that's the values thing. It's more about, are you disabled in looking after yourself? Because porn trumps all of your other needs. And that's when you start to think maybe that's a compulsivity issue and I need to look at it. But if you look at it, and you go to therapy for it, and you go to a good sex positive therapist, it's not going to be about stopping watching porn. It's going to, because that's not the issue in itself, it's going to be about what can you do to regulate your emotions as well as porn. So watching porn is one method of regulating emotions, but actually you need to be adding 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other ways to regulate your emotions, and then you can choose.
Amazing. Silva, this is such a positive take. It sounds so hopeful. So if there are any listeners who are recognizing themselves in what you've just said, in that category of actually having a compulsive behavior using porn to the extent of not being able to enjoy their lives fully, because this is kind of taking over and trumping everything else as their one way of regulating emotions. If there is anybody listening that says, yes, I think that could actually be me, then Silva is saying there is hope. It is not all doom and gloom. You don't have to quit porn. You don't have to go cold turkey. But it is a great idea to see somebody who is a sex positive therapist who can actually guide you through that process. So that is a real happy message, actually, Silva. I'm just so glad that you're able to do this. Just normalize and validate people who are using porn just in a normal way. And like you said, there's no set number of times that makes it a problem. It doesn't matter how many times you're using porn. If it is something that is feeling good, is not impacting your life negatively, then it's okay, right? So how yes. can busy couples use porn? What would you say then if, for example, you are in a situation where there are two people in this relationship who have differing values? How could somebody who's using porn explain to their partner in a way to preserve both people's values and create space for them to use this as one of their coping mechanisms on, you know, in their busy life?
Yes, I think it is about normalizing the conversation, as you say, and to really try sometimes to translate it. If it was another topic, how would we feel about it? You know, somebody, it's quite social. So we are socialized to think that if you have a hard day at work, you come home and you have a glass of whiskey. And that's normalized. And I'm pretty sure that most people come home and say, look, and they said to their partner, I've had a really, really busy, stressful day. I'm going to have a glass of whiskey. Nobody is going to tell them that they are an addict or they have a problem and or that they shouldn't do that, because we're socialized to think of that. You know, sometimes it could be like, you know what, I've had a hard day at work, so I'm just going to check out all weekend watching Netflix. Okay, that again is normalized. Okay. Yeah. And so it's really having that same thing to try to normalize the use of porn as a way of checking out for the weekend because you've had a hard week at work, just for entertainment, just for pleasure, and just a way of finishing off the day, a hard, busy day with a little bit of a quick orgasm that doesn't take all the energy of having sex with your partner. And for busy, busy couples, sometimes that's just all that's needed, you know, a little bit of solo sex, you know, 10 minutes. Because that's what it takes, you know, recording. If according to the stats, that's kind of the amount of time that it takes. And then you can continue after that connecting with your partner. And if you don't feel shamed about it, you're more likely to connect with your partner very well afterwards, before and after. And it could be one way of saying, you know, we're looking after ourselves in this way. And so and it's about that. And if partners have issues about it or they have questions about it, of course, there could be a conversation about reassurance, you know, to actually say, you know, watching this is just for my own private solo time. It doesn't mean I don't love what we do in bed. It doesn't mean I don't love your body. It doesn't mean I am not satisfied. I'm totally satisfied with our sex life, with you, with your body. And I also like to watch this, just like in real life. We don't always like to watch movies that are real life movies. We like to watch alien movies and we like to watch fantasy movies. And that's a way of getting ourselves out of our heads. And so porn can be just that. And there isn't always a very big, dark meaning behind what people watch. It can just be fantasies.
Absolutely. I love that you said that. There doesn't always have to be a big, dark meaning behind it. And in a way, one thing that I read before is, just saying that it's almost like a two-dimensional character on the screen, that people don't necessarily lust after that exact character that they're seeing. It doesn't mean that that's exactly what they want. In the same way that fantasies that we have and that we want that exact thing to happen, it's just a visual aid. It's just something else to add to, you know, our complex sexual expressions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And in fact, there's been some really kind of fascinating studies on fantasies, which showed up that most of the time, we, even though we might just like to watch a pretty actress on TV, like Charlize Theron, for example, or something like this, that we might like the how she looks like and whatever, but most people at the end of the day, they actually fantasize more about their own partners than people on TV, because they have an emotional bond with the partner. So the fantasy becomes a lot more alive because they have the emotional bond. With somebody on TV or somebody on the screen, you don't have an emotional bond. You might like what they look like, but you don't have that kind of bond.
I love it. Oh, this is all good news today. Thank you for sharing this. So anybody who wants to come and learn more about you and the work that you're doing, where can they come and find you and how can they work with you?
I've got one website for people to find out about me. That's silvernevers.co.uk, and I've got another website for, especially for compulsive sexual behavior, for information on compulsive sexual behavior. That's sexpositivityuk.com, and so people can go on that website, and there's a list of therapists who are sex positive therapists that people can go to for help if they really need some help with that. So I recommend that website for finding the right therapist for them. And if people are wanting to know more about sex and fantasies and sexual behaviors, I wrote the book Compulsive Sexual Behavior. That's for clinicians, but I'm told that it's a book that anybody can understand because I wrote it in really simple language. And my second book, Sexology, the Basics, it's also, as it says in the title, the basics on sex education and sexology. So if people want to have good information on sex education, that's also a book they can read.
Brilliant. And tell us what just happened with your book, Sexology the Basics. I saw something that you posted about that.
Yes, it's become mandatory reading for the University of Guelph in Canada, and I'm told it's kind of like a book that is on the reading list of lots of universities now and lots of different courses. So I'm very quite happy for that. And I think it's going to be translated in a language. I don't know which one, but like a foreign language at some point. So it's got a popular one, really. So that's very good. I'm very happy about this. And I'm getting a
That
lot of
is incredible.
feedback. Getting a lot of feedback of people taking my book on holiday, taking some pics of my book on holiday. So that's kind of fun.
Congratulations. It's a great one to take on the tube, isn't it? Sexology the basics.
Yes, if you don't want to be crowded around you get that book out and people will start to move away from you. You get more space on the tube.
Oh, maybe they'll want to peer over your shoulder and learn something new.
All that, yes, that's true.
It is on my reading list, Silva. I'm going to grab myself a copy of that. So yes, you're doing incredible work in the world, and you do just your personality just shines through. So everybody should come and follow you as well on social media, I think. So
Oh.
please share your handles. But everybody wants to come and find you on Instagram. Is it Silva Neves? At Silva Neves?
It's
Is there something?
at Silver Nevis Psychotherapy on Instagram, and
Like it.
on X slash Twitter, it's Silver Nevis 3, I think.
Oh, are there three of
Yeah. Apparently, I don't know. That's the handle I was given, so I don't know why.
But you do. You just shine through. You're such fun, and you're always sharing something positive or real and like surprising. And you've got a lot of color in your personality and your outfits and your music choices. Yeah, you're just a joy to follow. So
Well,
thank
that's
you
what
for
life is
that.
about. Life is about colors and enjoying it and pleasure.
Oh yes, I'm 100% with you there. Thank you so much for sharing your evening with me. It's been such a joy to chat with you, Silva.
Was great chatting with you too. Thank you.